seated on the divan beside Langdon, Sophie drank her tea and ate a scone, feeling the welcome effects of caffeine and food. Sir Lee Teabing was beaming as he awkwardly paced before the open fire, his leg braces clicking on the stone hearth. "The Holy Grail," Teabing said, his voice sermonic. "Most people ask me only where it is. I fear that is a question I may never answer." He turned and looked directly at Sophie. "However, the far more relevant question is this. What is the Holy Grail?" Sophie sensed a rising air of academic anticipation now in both of her male companions. "How well do you know the New Testament?" Teabing asked. Sophie shrugged. "Not well at all, really. I was raised by a man who worshipped Leonardo da Vinci." Teabing looked both startled and pleased. "An enlightened soul. Superb. Then you must be aware that Leonardo was one of the keepers of the secret of the Holy Grail, and he hid clues in his art."
"Robert told me as much, yes."
"And da Vinci's views on the New Testament?"
"I have no idea."
Teabing's eyes turned mirthful as he motioned to the bookshelf across the room. "Robert, would you mind? On the bottom shelf, La Storia di Leonardo." Langdon went across the room, found a large art book, and brought it back, setting it down on the table between them. Twisting the book to face Sophie, Teabing opened it to a colorful graphic that spanned both full pages. "I assume you recognize this fresco?"
"He's kidding, right?"
Sophie was staring at the most famous fresco of all time, The Last Supper, da Vinci's legendary work which portrayed Jesus and his disciples at the moment that Jesus announced one of them would betray him.
"I know the fresco, yes."
"Then perhaps you would indulge me this little game? Close your eyes, if you would." Uncertain, Sophie closed her eyes. "Where is Jesus sitting?" Teabing asked.
"In the center."
"Good. And what food are he and his disciples breaking and eating?"
"Bread."
"Superb. And what drink?"
"Wine. They drank wine."
"Great. And one final question. How many wine glasses are on the table?"
"One cup," she said. "The chalice."
"The cup of Christ, the Holy Grail.
Jesus passed a single chalice of wine, just as we do today at communion."
Teabing sighed.
"Open your eyes."
She did. Teabing was grinning smugly. Sophie looked down at the painting, seeing to her astonishment that everyone at the table had a glass of wine, including Christ. 13 cups. Moreover, the cups were tiny, stemless, and made of glass. There was no chalice in the painting. No Holy Grail. Teabing's eyes twinkled. "A bit strange, don't you think, considering that both the Bible and our standard Grail legend celebrate this moment as the definitive arrival of the Holy Grail? Oddly, da Vinci appears to have forgotten to paint the cup of Christ."
"Surely art scholars must have noted that."
"You will be shocked to learn what anomalies da Vinci included here that most scholars either do not see or simply choose to ignore. This fresco, in fact, is the entire key to the Holy Grail mystery." Sophie scanned the work eagerly.
"Does this fresco tell us what the Grail really is?"
"Not what it is," Teabing whispered,
"but rather who it is.
The Holy Grail is not a thing. It is, in fact,
a person."
Sophie stared at Teabing a long moment and then turned to Langdon.
"The Holy Grail is a person?"
Langdon nodded. "A woman, in fact." From the blank look on Sophie's face, Teabing could tell they had already lost her. "Robert, perhaps this is the moment for the symbologist to clarify." He went to a nearby end table, found a piece of paper, and laid it in front of Langdon. Langdon pulled a pen from his pocket. "Sophie, are you familiar with the modern icons for male and female?" He drew the common male symbol and female symbol.
"Of course,"
she said. "These," he said quietly, "are not the original symbols for male and female. The original symbols are far simpler." Langdon drew another icon on the paper. It looked like an inverted V. "This symbol is the original icon for male," he told her, "a rudimentary phallus. And the female symbol, as you might imagine, is the exact opposite." He drew another symbol on the page, an upright V. This is called the chalice. Sophie glanced up, looking surprised. The chalice, he continued, resembles a cup or vessel, and, more importantly, it resembles the shape of a woman's womb. Sophie, the Grail legend tells us the Holy Grail is a chalice, a cup. But the Grail's description as a chalice is actually a metaphor for something far more important.
A woman, Sophie said.
Exactly. Langdon smiled. The Grail is literally the ancient symbol for womanhood, and the Holy Grail represents the sacred feminine, the goddess, which of course has now been lost, virtually eliminated by the church. The power of the female and her ability to produce life was once very sacred, but it posed a threat to the rise of the predominantly male church, and so the sacred feminine was demonized and called unclean. The Grail, Langdon continued, is symbolic of the lost goddess. Sophie shook her head.
I'm sorry. When you said the Holy Grail was a person, I thought you meant it was an actual person.
It is, Langdon said. And not just any woman, Teabing blurted as he collected his crutches and motioned down the hall.
And if we adjourn to the study, my friends, it would be my honor to show you Da Vinci's painting of her.
Two rooms away, in the kitchen, manservant Remy Legelodec stood in silence before a television. The news station was broadcasting photos of a man and woman, the same two individuals to whom Remy had just served tea. Standing at the roadblock outside the Depository Bank of Zurich, Lieutenant Collet's cellular rang. It was the command post at the Louvre.
Do we have a search warrant yet? Collet demanded.
Forget about the bank, Lieutenant, the agent told him.
We just got a tip. We have the exact location where Langdon and Neveu are hiding.
You're kidding.
I have an address in the suburbs, somewhere near Versailles.
Does Captain Fash know?
Not yet. He's on an important call.
I'm on my way. Have him call me in the car.
Collet took down the address and jumped in his car. 48 kilometers away, a black Audi pulled off a rural road and parked in the shadows on the edge of a field. Silas got out and peered through the rungs of the wrought iron fence that encircled the vast compound before him. He gazed up the long moonlit slope to the chateau in the distance. The downstairs lights were all ablaze.
Odd for this hour,
Silas thought, smiling. The information the teacher had given him was obviously accurate.
I will not leave this house without the keystone, he vowed. I will not fail the bishop and the teacher.
Checking the 13-round clip in his Glock 21, Silas pushed it through the bars and let it fall onto the mossy ground inside the compound. Then, gripping the top of the fence, he heaved himself up and over. Ignoring the slash of pain from his psyllus, Silas retrieved his gun and began the long trek up the grassy slope.